This week on Timey-Wimey TV, we admire DeGray Scott in Doctor Who's Hyde.
Looking good for his growing up.
Yeah, I'm okay.
I can say that as a man.
I can say that as a lady. River Song in The Angel's Kiss. She made ample mention of her ample assets. And Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, just cause. With his shirt half open and kind of glistening. Hello, internets. This is Liz Shannon Miller at Lizlet on the Twitters.
And I'm Rudy Jashan at Rudy on Twitter. And you're listening to Timey Wimey TV, our podcast on Doctor Who and all other kinds of time travel media.
You are totally listening to it. That is not a lie. You are in this moment. You are present. You are here with us, and we are glad of it.
Someone's been taking some sort of self-affirmation courses by the sounds of it.
I am actualizing my persona, and I am finding my own self within the self.
Wow.
Yes, I could write a book very easily, very quickly, and I would make millions.
You should.
I should.
You should. We can upgrade our studio.
Yes, from my coffee table.
I know.
That'd be very exciting.
My statement is not untrue.
Oh, good times, good times. Speaking of good times, what a week it's been.
Yeah.
But Doctor Who was there.
Yay! And thank God Doctor Who was there.
Yes, it was one of those things where, like, I was just going through the news, my news feeds, and then, like, Doctor Who, like, in, you know, with all the stuff that's been going on, and we're not going to go into details about it, because God knows you've already, if you're listening to this, you know what we're talking about, you've already had enough of it. But we were going through the news feeds, and, like, it was like, oh.
Breaking news. Something bad happened.
Breaking news. Something bad happened. Breaking news. Something bad happened. Breaking news. Doctor Who announces the name of the season finale. And I was like, ah, okay. I will click on this link. This is the link I shall click on.
Life. You're like, well, that's what the doctor's for. Making you feel good.
Yes, that's why they call him the doctor. He makes people better. So the name of the finale, actually, but that's apparently not what we're going to be calling the doctor going forward. The season finale of Doctor Who, which we late May, I believe, will be entitled The Name of the Doctor.
The Name of the Doctor, which, as we also recall, is tied to the fall of the 11th.
Oh, gosh, that's right. I mean, Matt Smith's definitely in the 50th. Like, they're filming it now, and there are photos and everything. So right. It's not like, but maybe it's like the beginning of the fall of the 11th. This is all presuming that any of the things that have been planted regarding the name of the doctor and the...
This is also presuming that this episode is actually going to reveal the name.
I mean, the tagline for it on the poster that was released was, "His secret revealed."
Right.
Wait.
I'm shrugging my shoulders. I'm shrugging my shoulders, radio listeners.
But wait. But if we all know the doctor's name, doesn't that mean we all get married to the doctor? Isn't that part of the Gallifreyan marriage ceremony?
Don't get ahead of yourself there, Liz. I know it might fulfill certain fantasies, but...
Oh, no, I'm asking for... I don't want to be in a polyamorous relationship. I want it...
With Matt Smith and Alex Kingston.
I might not want to be in a polyamorous relationship. Well, not Matt Smith, Alex Kingston, and the rest of humanity.
That's true.
Like, that's a lot to share.
That's a lot to share.
That's a hell of a custody agreement.
Yeah, my bet is that they're not going to reveal his name.
Really?
I totally believe that's the case.
Huh.
And this is not me based on any kind of thing I've read or any crap like that. It's honestly just going like, I will be surprised if Moffat reveals anything to us. Or if it's revealed, it's going to be one of those, like, cutaway reveals. Where you're like, his name is... And then you hear a squealing alarm and the guy's lips moving and you know, someone's face goes, puts their hand up to their mouth. That kind of revelation.
I'm trying to figure out if I want to make a bet with you about this. Because the last time we made a bet about something, it didn't work out great for me.
I know.
But I also kind of think that they're not going to shy away from it as much as you're saying. I think at least we'll get something.
Oh, I don't know. His name is John.
Bob.
Bob.
I'm betting on Bob. But it'll be, I mean, what were the other episode? You have the other episodes up confirmed.
Yeah, and it was not only would they give the name out. The names of the other ones were kind of known. Were known, actually. The only question was whenever they airing. And with them, apart from the name of the last episode, they published out posters for each of these things.
Oh, nice.
We can go through them.
We can link to them.
We can link to them. Have you got them up there?
I don't, but okay. I'll come. You go ahead and just say the names.
Well, the first one is The Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Which is next week's episode.
That is next week's episode, and especially everything that's been going on lately with the TARDIS and...
And Clara.
And Clara. What does that mean? Oswin. Yes. That one has a very M.C. Escher... is it Escher?
Yes.
Yeah, the M.C. Escher kind of like staircases going every which way... But they're all TARDIS-y. Everything's light, the TARDIS blue. And features Jenna Louise Coleman in a very fetching outfit, I have to say.
She's very pretty.
Well, she's adorable. It's not even prettiness. It's like, it's an adorable outfit.
It's a cute outfit. It's a cute dress.
It's a cute dress. Everyone's seen the trailer for that one. After that, supposedly, is The Crimson Horror with references to Sweetville. And
Sweetville?
Sweetville.
What's that?
I don't know, and it features a doctor in a bowler hat, and actually not in his usual getup by the looks of it.
It looks old-timey.
It looks actually like Clara is back in her outfit.
The governess outfit.
The governess outfit, and I hear that apparently this story begins when someone finds a kind of like candy-glazed body on the riverbanks of the Thames or something like that.
Okay, so like a nice Victorian...
murder mystery.
Okay.
Maybe we can see Madame Vespa back, though you'd think they'd feature her on the poster if that
you, was. You would hope.
Then Nightmare in Silver,
the Neil Gaiman Cyberman episode.
I wonder how that's going to turn out. I've not heard good things or bad things about it.
Well, I mean, we don't usually hear good things or bad things about a Doctor Who episode before we see it.
Yeah.
It's actually one of the advantages of Doctor Who is that it's not like when a movie's coming out and you get the early reviews and you get your friends. Word of mouth. Yeah, the closest you get to word of mouth is people in Britain bitching about it on Twitter at like noon.
Right. Actually, we totally used to know what's happening going in because of the time delay.
Well, only if you avoided it carefully, you still managed to avoid it. But there's no pre like.
No, I'm talking about like the 3 month when we're completely off base.
But you would carefully avoid it in that case. And then finally, The Name of the Doctor. So we only have what, 4 more episodes?
Yeah.
Wow.
And just to say that the Nightmare in Silver one has a very Iron Man-esque feel for it.
Huh.
Whereas The Name of the Doctor, it features Matt Smith looking hauntingly through a smashed window.
I think they're going to say something.
That actually might be the TARDIS.
Oh, no.
It might actually be the TARDIS doorway or something like that.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that Moffat's blown up the TARDIS. Wouldn't be the last.
Yes. What are we going to do now this season? Blow up the TARDIS.
Yes. I need to go back and re-examine season 5 because I feel like I would really like it. More in a second run through.
Season 5?
Yeah.
I think season 5, I did like it when we went through it, and it was great. It was good to happen. Yeah. It was great. Season 6 is the one that I felt like starts off with a bang and kind of peters out when all is said and done.
Yeah.
But that could also have been done because of expectations.
That could be true. Speaking of, well, we've been talking a lot about, we brought up Alex Kingston again, who will be coming back to... Who'll be coming back to the show at the end of the year.
And just a quick thing, not spoiling anything for anyone anymore. Did I ever talk about what was the proposed episode name?
No.
Okay, and now I would be spoiling something, so I'll be, I will...
You,
I,
yeah, I will so, oh, okay, so we're not talking about
we're
that.
We're not talking about it.
All right, cool. Interesting.
Yes.
Well, we might have to talk about that off the air. Speaking of Alex Kingston, I finally sat down and read... the Melody Malone mystery, The Angel's Kiss.
Okay.
I've been meaning to read for a few weeks now, and I apologize for not having done so. If you don't remember, this is the basically detective-esque noir novella that they released shortly after, I believe, the last episode with Amy and Rory in season 7. And
Angels is... No, not, I was going to say Angels Take Manhattan. I'm like, no, I'm confusing with a terrible episode.
No, I think it is the Angels Take Manhattan or something like that.
Really?
This is embarrassing. We'll figure it out later. Right. By the way, I want to mention from last week's episode, I couldn't remember the name of the thing that the Doctor uses to make himself human.
Right.
And it is the Chameleon Arch. I was right about that. I didn't think that they named the he would have two devices on his ship, one named the Chameleon Arch and one named the Chameleon Circuit.
Okay.
But he did.
He did.
That is not my fault. That is Doctor Who's fault. And I remembered it properly.
Okay.
So anyways, it might be the Angels Take Manhattan is my point. I'm more trusting of my memory this week than last week.
Okay.
But I think the interesting thing about Angel's Kiss is that I'm not going to do like a full-on review just because, you know, Rudy hasn't read it and I don't want to spoil anything. It's much shorter than you'd expect. And the writing of it is pretty fun. It is like very like, it is kind of femme, like it's basically the, you know, your standard like hard-boiled detective novel.
Right.
But with River Song, and very deliberately River Song, as the lead character, and just kind of like va-va-vooming all over the place.
Okay, and almost, so she's both the femme fatale and the private detective?
Yeah, I mean, and the one thing I will say is I feel like the balance is a little off. Like, her va-va-vooming is like, I would say about once or twice, at least three or four times a chapter, like, she made ample mention of her ample assets and her stunning figure. And this might qualify as the Liz's Bitchy Feminist Moment of the Week. I'm not sure yet. But Justin Roberts had a great deal of fun describing how much River Song likes her boobs.
Okay.
And I, at a certain point, was like, I understand. I have come to learn from your writing, sir, that River Song likes her boobs. I think we can concentrate on other stuff now.
I might have to read this novel in detail. I was going to ask one thing. I don't know whether I should save it for myself or actually to ask you outright right now. It's like, does it actually tie into the final episode? Like, you know, during the final episode, that was the novel they were reading.
It is actually a completely separate story.
Okay, because in the novel, there's no, like, hello, sweetie, or anything like that.
No, there's no tie-in. It's, like, this little, like, random adventure involving a movie studio.
Okay, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, no, it's, like, it's a standalone story that you could technically read without ever having seen an episode of Doctor Who.
Okay.
And, I mean, you wouldn't get as much from it, but you would. And, actually, the one major thing is that the angels are a factor in it. And
okay,
so you would be very confused
okay.
on that front. But I think it's just kind of riffing on the idea of there being more Melody Malone mysteries out there in the world.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a thing they were going to probably continue. It seems like they're doing a lot of these one-off little things and having fun with it, but not really making real proper series out of them.
Right.
But still, it's fun. And you were telling me, speaking of media that someone else enjoyed, you were telling me about something IO9 dug up on the internets.
Right. So apparently the 30th, and this is, might surprise people, the 50th anniversary was not the first anniversary that we're dealing with here.
There have been 49 other anniversaries prior to this one.
I mean, there's been some that are more infamous, like the 20th or 25th one, which is the Five Doctors, which was the epic one.
That is 83. So I think it's...
The 20th anniversary.
I believe so. Something like that.
So the 30th anniversary...
I don't know. Okay.
Well, the 30th anniversary of Doctor Who had its epic storyline that they decided to do something was to have every living Doctor once again get together for a television special. Mm. It was a Children for Need television special.
How long was it?
It was, I think, 1 or 2 hours.
Now, and it's important to remember, of course, that at this point, Doctor Who had been canceled for at least 5 years.
Yes.
Because they went off at 87?
I think so, yeah.
And then, so this is, talking about 93. So Doctor Who's been off the air for like 6 years.
So they decided to do a Doctor Who special where Rani, another time lady.
The Romney. Yes.
Decides to entrap the Doctor in the East End. And by that, literally the British soap opera... EastEnders. So it was a crossover with the EastEnders, the Doctor running around interacting with people on that show. Yeah, it was... I like just hearing this, I'm like... The funny thing for me is I have this fascination with the EastEnders, which is like... Of like, it's this weird thing where you see, you know, America.
Do you actually watch it?
No, I just... I kind of like... I've watched an occasional episode, but it's more of been like watching a train wreck. You're like, this is fascinating. This is so, so fascinating. Because...
American soap operas also are fascinating to me, like how they just draw everything out, the acting, the way the shots are done, all that stuff.
I mean, when you're a nice little storytelling machine going on for literally decades.
Right.
It is something to be admired.
Exactly. So you're
preferably
like,
from afar, but you know, still admired.
Yeah, and I get like it's so fascinating, and then like to hear about the EastEnders, which is like the British version of that. It's like watching it from coming from another planet.
Yeah.
And then tossing Doctor Who. So like this is what I love. It's canonically it's Doctor Who. That means the EastEnders exist in the same universe.
But that's weird, though, because they watch EastEnders in an episode of Doctor Who.
I know.
What's happening?
It is so funny. And so so every living doctor appears in it. They even actually explain what happened to the first two doctors in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tom Baker at the same time, he did a bit more than what he did for the five doctors, where he was just extra film footage.
Yes. In this one, he actually came up and shot new film.
Yeah, I think he might have actually just done his voice. Because basically it starts with him like telling the other doctors, watch out, don't get trapped in the East End, the Romulans set us a trap. And you know, she's already caught the grumpy one and the flautist, you know, like the first two doctors.
I enjoy it.
And then so the whole plot is basically as the doctor and his companion keep switching in and out. Like the nature of the trap is that she keeps changing who the doctor and the companion are. So you actually go through like different weird combinations of doctors and companions.
Oh my gosh.
But apparently it's terrible. It looks terrible, but we have to watch it. So I think we're going to try to dig it up and watch the entire thing.
Yes. This is another fun project for our summer.
Yeah.
Maybe this will be our reward for going through a classic Doctor Who.
I think so. Or maybe like what we should watch. You know, actually what we should do is like watch every anniversary special.
I wouldn't mind doing that, though
we might be lost.
We might be a little lost, but
so I don't think a little internet research will help us out there.
Yes. If we have the internet handy, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So though. And we're putting this on the playlist. I think it'll be a great special to have before the.
Yeah, I mean, just basically as a reminder, as we get more and more like, and if it, as the anticipation builds for next season, I think for not for next season, but for the 50th anniversary special, I think you know we're gonna need to. Remember that no matter how bad that is, it could be worse.
It could be worse.
At the very least, we're going to have Matt Smith and we're going to have, at the very least with this, we're going to have, with the 50th anniversary special, we're going to have Matt Smith and David Tennant probably making fun of each other's hair.
Yeah.
And that's all I need in life. That and my animated GIF. Speaking of we're going to take a quick detour from the world of Doctor Who just to mention an interesting casting announcement, which is that Inspector Space Time, the web series based mm-hmm. on the thing, based on the community webisode, the community episode.
Parodying Doctor Who.
Yeah, yes, the community parody of Doctor Who, which has now become just, it's a full-on own thing.
Yeah. It's not Inspector Space Time. It's an untitled web series.
It's an untitled web series. But The said untitled web series has cast Mayim Bialik.
Yes.
Was she Punky Brewster?
She's Blossom.
Okay, fine. I didn't watch Blossom.
She's on Big Bang Theory.
I know that another show I don't watch.
Oh my god.
I mean, I knew that she was on Big Bang Theory, which I imagine is the big nerd cachet.
Every young North American lad had a secret crush on Big Nose Blossom. No,
really, with the hats? Like, if does Casey wear the hats?
I cannot confirm nor deny this.
Oh, God, the hats.
No, I think the marketing was more around the idea that every guy was in love with Blossom. But I think everyone just tuned in to watch Joey Lawrence go, whoa, whoa, whoa.
See, I know that part.
Everyone knows, whoa,
whoa. But Mayim Bialik is now on Big Bang Theory, which is probably a big factor in bringing her onto Inspector Space Time as, I believe, the voice of the booth.
The voice of the booth.
So the booth with which the Inspector travels through space and time will have a voice, and it'll be Mayim Bialik. And now you all know this. I hope you've enjoyed learning it.
G.I. Joe. Yeah.
And with that said, are you ready to talk about Hyde?
Let's talk about Hyde.
Our new episode. Oh, I came up with an idea, by the way.
What's your idea?
For a new spoiler noise. We should do Mark A. Shepherd.
Mark A. Shepherd?
Spoilers. Yeah, see? He's the voice of BBC America.
Not anymore.
What? No, they swapped him out?
Well, if you listen to some of the newer ones, it's clearly someone doing an imitation of Mark A. Shepherd. That or he's just not giving a fuck anymore.
That's probably more likely.
Really?
Why would they get rid of Mark A. Shepard?
He's a well-loved actor.
Yeah, but he's...
The guy's great.
But he's the voice of BBC.
We're all going to remember Mark A.
But he shows up for, what, like half an hour? He bangs out some promos. Actors kill for these gigs.
We have to investigate, because I don't know if it's the case, but we can definitely do it.
Yeah.
I actually wonder if between the two of us, if we can somehow ask Mark A. Shepard to record something for us.
Oh my God, that'd be wonderful. Someday.
Let's go for it.
We're going to do it.
Yeah.
We can achieve this.
Ask Mark A. Shepard to say the word spoilers just for our
show. Yes. But in the meantime, we'll do an impression.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. That's terrible.
We're going to work on that, folks.
It's why we need Mark A. Shepard to record it.
Yes. So, yes.
If you can help us out with that, please do so.
Yes.
But in Hyde.
So Hyde, the episode that spoilers begin now, this week's newest episode of Doctor Who was kind of basically set up as a ghost story.
Yeah, it's basically, it begins in the 1970s, where a man and a woman are investigating paranormal activity in a house using oldie time radio equipment like they did. I remember that was a craze for a while in the 70s and 80s. Like,
yeah?
Ghost hunting. Like, it's a craze. Well, it was, I think the craze has died out again, but like 2 or 3 years ago, it was super interested.
I didn't know that it was a that makes sense, given that then Ghostbusters comes in on the tail of that.
Right.
Like, but yeah, so
it was a British craze, because I remember going, because remember I grew up in a British school system, even though I was living in the Middle East.
Right.
And I just was reading all these British books, and there was like a bunch of books about ghost hunting and all these horror things about this thing, and all of them featured the fact of radio equipment and recordings and stuff like that.
Yes.
So I think it was just based around that sense of that time period. Mm-hmm. And so they've been examining this ghost in this house. Yep. The woman from the well.
Yes. And they keep trying to reach out to her, and she's apparently an ancient spirit who's always been there.
Yeah.
And
always in the same position.
Yes. And they can't seem to get through to her. Even though one of them is, you know, the gentleman is a scientist type with glasses. So, you know, he's smart. And then his companion, assistant, sorry.
Looks forlongingly at him.
But, she is an empath.
An empath.
So she has the ability to basically communicate, or she's got good reads on people's emotions.
Right.
She's Deanna Troi.
Yeah, exactly.
But with ghost hunting powers.
And so after yet another incident with the ghost, that's when Doctor and Claire show up.
Yes.
They seem so excited that they're coming here for some reason.
The Doctor convinces them that he's military intelligence because he rattles off their resumes.
Right. And then they investigate the ghost, see some kind of like spooky horror moments.
Yes.
Until they realize, the Doctor with an interesting segment realizes the ghost takes a TARDIS and goes to every point in history of Earth and discovers the ghost is always there, because it's not a ghost. It's a woman trapped in a pocket universe.
Yeah, so
running away.
It's a time traveler who's been basically running in one place for what feels like 3 minutes to her,
right,
but has actually been like the span of millennia, because she is a pioneering time traveler,
right,
who is experimenting, whose experiments with time travel have gone horribly wrong and have trapped her in this thing. And she, in this pocket universe, she's being chased by another, a ghoulish thing as well.
A very ghoulish thing.
And, so the doctor convinces, the scientist and his assistant to help them free the lady.
Right.
Which they successfully do. The doctor, however, gets trapped in the pocket universe, while the time traveler lady gets back out of it.
And there's one significant thing here, because one first thing Clara smartly asks is, why don't you just take the TARDIS to save her? And as we know, alternate universe is very costly.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it's a pocket universe that if the TARDIS shows up for more than a few seconds, it will effectively kill the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
And so in like within minutes, I think what it was.
It was like 3 minutes, it would drain all of her power or something.
Right. And so there's this whole scheme then where first Clara has to talk to the TARDIS. And this is a significant scene where the TARDIS...
After the Doctor's trapped in the pocket universe, she goes to the TARDIS.
And the TARDIS keeps not letting her in. And also finally manifests a holographic interface that basically say, I don't like you.
Yes. Well, it's... we've seen it before, the holographic, you know, the TARDIS, like, will create a holographic interface based on old companions.
On old companions that you can relate to or, you know, will trust.
Yeah.
And or someone you respect greatly.
Yes.
And
which, for some reason, the TARDIS manifests in front of Clara as Clara.
And Clara keeps calling the TARDIS a cow, which I think is hilarious.
Yes.
And basically they have this confrontation where the TARDIS kind of refuses at first and and then they sort of team up together to go save the Doctor by flying through the universe, picking him up quickly, and then going through the very portal that he, like, a remanifested portal. So there's, the TARDIS is not actually stuck there. He actually, it has a chance to sort of move in physical space once it's in there.
Right.
And they do that, save the time travel, save the Doctor, and go one more time, in fact, because the Doctor realized the monster that's been chasing them, it actually was trying to get back into our universe to meet its lady friend monster.
Yes, the two monsters, there were two monsters in love, and they were just trying to get back home.
Yeah, so all the hauntings and spookiness would just happen to be different things like that.
And it's revealed that the reason that the time traveler lady was able to connect with the scientist and specifically the assistant.
Yeah,
is because she is the descendant of the scientist and the assistant, largely because the scientist and the assistant, has been mentioned, are clearly deeply in love and are going to get their shit together.
Yay!
Eventually, hopefully, as soon as this episode ends.
It's a love story.
Yes, he says. The doctor says.
The doctor says it's a love story.
And then, and this is, I think, a really important, but in just and part of all this big finale ending. This, we're mixing up the order here of events here, but you know that's pretty okay. In the midst of all this, the Doctor reveals why he went to this haunted house in the first place, which, oh my god, how much do I love it when the Doctor justifies his reason for landing in his destination.
Right.
Or not just, when I say justifies, how much do I love it when Doctor Who makes the reason why we're in a certain location and time make sense.
Right.
I love it when this happens. But the Doctor reveals that he never meant to get caught up with the ghost story. He wanted to find the assistant,
right,
who is a talented empath, which he knows about for some reason, and he wanted to ask her to read Clara for him, essentially. Right. And
it's actually also interesting because they do point out, it's interesting because you come into the episode and you think the Doctor's more interested in the dude.
Yeah.
And the guy, because they're like, you're a great war hero, you're so awesome, I love you, you're the best. And then it's like, at the end, it's like, actually, I want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And, Even the empath has said something about the Doctor to Clara, saying, like, don't trust him. He has ice in his heart.
Mm-hmm. Which,
we've seen.
He does.
He does. Well, kind of confirm, like, he's like, oh, ghosts. You know, actually, there's a kind of moment with Clara saying, like, we're all ghosts of the Doctor because we all die, where he pretty much lives on for the most part. And he's like, he has this moment like, you're not ghosts. You're the greatest mystery in the universe. Except they're talking about two different things.
They're talking about two different things. Oh, man. So, positives, Rudy.
I'm going to say I actually like this episode again. Actually, the last Neil Cross episode, the rings of
Akatan.
Like where we said, like, it really was fun, but it made no sense.
Yeah.
This one was kind of logically cohesive.
This one had, like, I mean, I think if you really sat down and picked it a little, like, you'd find some holes. But that's true of anything, really.
Yeah, and this was just like, well constructed. I enjoyed it. Fun characters. I was surprised. Only afterwards I realized, oh my god, that guy's Doug Ray Scott.
Yeah. There but for the grace of Wolverine, go Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, exactly. And but at the same time, like, Doug Ray Scott looking good for as he's growing up.
Yeah, I'm okay.
I can say that as a man.
Like, I can say that as a lady.
Like, so I was like, tell me, she cast that guy in a very serious piece. He looks like he can hold his own. And then
for your backstory purposes, friends, Doug Ray Scott, if you don't remember, was the original actor cast to play Wolverine in the first X-Men movie.
Right.
And had to drop out because Mission Impossible 2 went over schedule.
Yeah.
And so Hugh Jackman then ran literally from a rehearsal for Oklahoma to audition for the role, and history was made. I love Hugh Jackman, and I love but it turns out I also now love DeGray Scott. I thought he was great in this.
Yeah, and I actually gotta say, like, positives of the companions this, like, the other characters this week were interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was due to the fact there's only two of them. It wasn't like this overloaded cast.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, two well-developed, interesting characters with great scenes together and great chemistry. And I kind of wish there had been more development on the time traveler lady.
Yeah.
But that was, always, but that, that's easily understood as being a time and space issue.
Right. And they actually had a more interesting relationship going on.
They did.
And it was, I mean, for me, it was a well-shot, fun, through line. I mean, I enjoyed this episode. I was like, this is like a nice, cohesive, logical episode where I'm not going like, what?
Yeah.
Okay. And I love the bits with the TARDIS. I love the bits with the monster.
Yeah. There were a lot of, like, there are a lot of really great moments in this episode that are really smart, interesting character moments. Yeah.
And I actually would say, like, I wouldn't mind showing this to, like, you know, we say, like, what is a good episode is an episode you can maybe show to someone who's not into Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I think you could do it with this episode because it doesn't actually call back to a lot. Like, it really shows the strength of time travel.
I think, you know what? I really like that. I really like using this episode as an example of a pocket episode.
Right.
Or, like,
a well done pocket
episode. Yeah, because I think what it nails, what you could. I think what I really liked about it is that it does what I think a lot of my favorite Doctor Who episodes do, which is it starts in one place and it tells you this is the genre we're going to be this week. We're going to be a haunted house story.
Right.
And I think I even said last week that I'm not really into haunted house stories.
Right.
They're not my bag necessarily. And then, like, when the twist comes and the doctor goes, takes the TARDIS through time and figures out that it's a time traveler that's haunted.
It's a time travel episode, which it should be.
Yes, and it's not even necessarily that it's time travel. I've done 70 episodes of a time travel podcast. Of course, I've got a soft spot for time travel. But I like the idea of taking science fiction, taking something like a horror trope, and then twisting it into a science fiction tale. And that's the kind of genre bending that Doctor Who can do so well.
Right.
And I was really glad to see it happen here. I was also really glad because it was a science fiction. It was science fiction ultimately. Because because I think one thing that had me a little skittish at the beginning was that Doctor Who, I think, has a very clear worldview about things like ghosts.
Yeah, and like, it's every time you think it's something that's supernatural, it's not.
Yes. There's no such thing as the paranormal in Doctor Who.
Right. It's always aliens.
There's science.
Yeah.
There's a scientific, rational basis for what's happening. And so I really valued that in the episode.
You've seen it also before. I mean, with the werewolves.
Oh, yeah. The werewolves, yeah. Aliens. Yeah.
The vampire ones. Vampires of Venice.
Yes. Well, again, yeah. I mean, the answer isn't always just aliens, I think.
But No. My point being that it's never... It's never what it seems to be. It's always a sign. Like, aliens is still fantastical, but it's like, okay, it's aliens. You accept the fact that there's aliens in the world. You know, that's more scientifically believable than a creature that came out of whole cloth that has these issues.
Well, I think when you engage with a certain piece of science fiction, you kind of make rules.
Right.
Like, and you kind of, like, when you watch Firefly, like, one of the rules of Firefly was always going to be there are never going to be aliens.
Right.
The only creatures out there in the universe are humans.
Right.
And it's just humans dealing with humans upon humans. And, you know, Battlestar Galactica, you know, well, I'm not going to really talk about the finale, but as a whole, like, Battlestar Galactica was a show about, with military issues and, you know, political drama and space battles. It wasn't a show about time travel. No. So there wasn't any time travel in Battlestar, and that was kind of part of the rule.
See, I had this thing with Star Wars, where someone was suggesting, like, you know, they haven't really explored time travel in Star Wars. I'm like, yeah, but that would just not work in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, Star Wars is not... is just not about science even. It is a fantasy tale.
That explains that. That's actually a really good way of putting that.
Yeah.
It's like, and so, and Doctor Who, but Doctor Who meanwhile is all about science.
Right. Star Trek is all about science.
Yes.
So we'll see that there.
Yes. Interesting.
Yeah.
So I think that was all really well handled and I really respected, I really thought it was well put together. I also was really glad to get, I think we get you always need this moment with the companion where the companion realizes just how companion realizes just how goddamn old the doctor is. Mm-hmm. and just kind of the overwhelmingness of time travel. I think there's the scene with Clara just basically, you know, having just witnessed the entire life and death of her planet.
Right.
Realizing just how much of a blip she feels like she might be to the doctor.
But I also love that scene because of the underlying, like, you know, that moment she's like, am I buried out there? And he's like,
how many times?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, maybe? You know? I'm like, because he knows stuff that she doesn't know.
Yeah.
So that was like there's this, like, I love scenes like that. That's why I think this is one, like, a really good episode.
Mm-hmm.
Bordering on great even, but
certainly I think
that's a super solid one.
Yes, it's certainly the best episode we've seen so far since the return of the season.
Completely agree with you.
I mean, and I like the snowmen. I mean, I might even put it above the Snowmen, though. I think it's...
Yeah, it's Snowmen was had more... Snowmen, I say, lost some points for some, like, childishness to it.
Yeah.
Some magic a bit. Mm-hmm. But definitely this was...
This is just a really solid episode of Doctor Who.
Right.
And I think, and honestly, I feel like we've been dealing with B average episodes, and this one was an A minus.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, I mean, we can go to negatives now.
Negatives!
Which, I don't know if, I mean, I certainly, again, I wish that the time traveler lady character had been a little more developed.
That's true.
This is just me being a girl.
Is this the Liz Shannon Miller Spitchy Fan Moments of the Week?
No, this is me being a girl and saying I wanted to see DeGrasse Scott make out with his assistant.
Wow. Are you going to like Liz Shannon Miller Spitchy Fan Moment of the Week yourself now, or is that...
No, I think I'm on board with being a sappy romantic and also a feminist. I think the two are not incompatible.
So there, I mean, I completely...
I mean, I think there were nice scenes. I think the two really
Casey,
key...
when we were watching it, Casey coming like, kept saying... At the right moments, like the moments where she thought it should be, she'd be like, and I love you. You know, like she wanted to say it like that, or, and kiss her. You know, like she kept trying to say that to have it happen. And,
yeah. I think they wanted to keep the relationship. I think they wanted to avoid the big kissing moment and everything.
Yeah.
But, and I guess I respect that for not being traditional, but my sappy romantic radar was pinging and felt a little, a little underwhelmed. I also, especially because, it's just kind of this thing where it's like, I think they did such a, there's a couple of, it's a surprise, there's a surprising amount of this episode is devoted to developing DeGrasse Scott's character.
Right.
And there's some really fascinating elements to his backstory. And I almost like, I hope he comes back because I'd love to see him again.
It feels weird that they do a lot of setup for him. And yeah. As I said, it was kind of interesting where they didn't turn like, oh, well, actually we're interested in you, Emma. You're the more interesting one.
Yeah.
But who knows where it ends up?
I mean, I think I was reading something online, somebody was pointing out that I think, you know, it's like, you know, setting up the DeGrasse Scott character is kind of a parallel for the Doctor.
That was that obvious scene, where, especially when you have, the boys are talking over here, the ladies are talking over here.
Girl talk!
Yeah, exactly. There was the girl talk moment and the guy, the bro talk.
Yeah. But, I think there are two or three, like, big moments between DeGrasse Scott's character and the assistant girl who... I can't remember the actress's name, even though I've seen three or four episodes of Call the Midwife now.
Yeah.
Not a bad show. If you like your British drama where ladies ride bicycles.
I do.
Well, there you go. There are some bicycles being ridden.
That's the only reason I got into like Downton Abbey.
Bicycles.
The potential to see a lady ride a bicycle.
It's pretty hot. So anyways, I'm sorry I can't remember her name, but you know, they had some nice intense moments, but I just, at the end of the episode, I just wanted him to be happy. And I feel like him getting to kiss the assistant kissing him, that would have made him happy.
Yeah. He actually seemed more befuddled by the end of everything.
Yes.
He was like, wait, what just happened? I have a great granddaughter.
Also, and I think it points to the episode for never putting a finger on this, but I do love the fact that they cast a black woman as their great-great-great-great-granddaughter.
Right, which makes perfect... I was like,
that's... Post-racial!
Yay! You know, there was... Yeah, more development a bit. My thing was the too much marzipan. It was like... Everyone's in love at the end. It was like, and then we went back for the monster because the monster is in love, and this is all about love, 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 love. And
but with no kissing.
Well, that's my point. It was too much like this very childish love, like this very like, oh, boys and girls hold hands together. Which at some point was, I mean, it was sweet when he said like, what should we do now? Like, hold her hand. Now keep holding it. You know, like that's funny, but that seems to be the extent of love in the Doctor Who universe, which we know is not the case.
I mean, yeah. Let's see. Like they're. I mean, Rory and Amy had a mature relationship.
Oh, we definitely. We
she, they got...
There's, like, living proof running around the Doctor Who universe how mature their relationship is.
Yeah.
Who also, you know, exemplifies a very mature body character, you know, like...
Oh, my gosh. Remember? And gosh, even in, like, yeah. Like, yeah, they're Amy and Rory not only... I'm trying to think. I'm now, like, mentally cataloging all the references to Amy and Rory's sex life in my head.
Right.
Which include them wearing outfits during their honeymoon.
Yeah.
And also the bunk beds joke.
Right.
Which is still one of my favorite moments of New Who.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, so I think really interesting episode. Moving on to speculation.
Speculation.
I really liked the TARDIS threads in this episode.
Yeah.
Specifically, starting off with, I love the description of the TARDIS is like a cat. As Rudy and I are both cat owners,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, it's like, oh, you gotta be nice. It needs some time to warm up to you.
Yeah.
Unless it doesn't. You know, like, it's...
Yeah, sometimes the cat is just kind of a dick, and sometimes the cat is a sweetie pants who's just sleeping on the floor over there and will soon be running around making noise in, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But the doctor writing it off initially is, oh, the TARDIS is just like a cat, like, you know, she just needs time to warm up to you.
Right.
And then later, like, that deepening with the scene between Clara and the TARDIS interface, I think what I'm really excited about is the fact that next week is the episode Journey into the Center of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And if they know what they're doing, this episode was directly meant to lead into that episode.
Yeah.
And that episode is going to handle a lot of the things that people have been mentioning. And I have to say, I have been kind of quasi-writing off. People have been noticing for the last couple of episodes, man, it's kind of weird that the TARDIS and Clara don't get along. And I've been saying, eh. And it appears to be a bigger deal than I gave it credit for. And yeah. So I want to apologize to anyone who felt I was not taking them seriously.
I accept your apology. No, I mean, it's
yes, like... mostly listeners. But yes, listeners, you guys were right. I was wrong. Not the last time that's happened. Not the first time that's happened.
I'm more curious because she says, like, she's a normal girl. She's a normal girl. Part of me wants to slap the doctor and go, like, dude, whatever's going to happen to her has not happened yet. You picked her too early in her timeline. That's, like, my suspicion.
That's a good suspicion, though. Though, gosh, I just don't want, like, the doctor to have another pity party over ruining somebody's life.
I can totally see that. Like, if I never picked her up in the first place, you know, she never would have been like this.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey, yeah. Man.
I'm surprised, though, that they, about the great intelligence, like, definitely having him at the first episode said him as a big bad. We've not seen his head appear again.
I think there's room still yet. It doesn't look like, I mean, let's see, you were thinking about next couple of episodes, it doesn't seem like we're going to, it doesn't seem like we'll be going to old-timey times anytime, or modern times anytime soon. That seems right. To be where the Doctor, or where the Great Intelligence is.
Right. During the Center of TARDIS is going to be interesting, because I think we've had some scenes of other rooms in the TARDIS before, but this looks like it might really explore what's going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea that he has a menagerie that we've never seen of things that might get loose.
Where's that?
That was part of the trailer.
Oh, I missed that. Okay. So yeah, I missed the menagerie thing entirely, but it does not surprise me that the Doctor has menagerie of terrible things in this TARDIS.
Or wonderful things.
Or wonderful things, or terrible wonderful things.
Terribly wonderful.
Sometimes he looks at a thing and he says, oh, you beauty, and
you're like, no.
No, vet wants to eat you.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing. So you want to, let's move on, moving on to your guys' comments, your guys' thoughts and feelings and whatnots. Charlie Labman tweeted us last night, best episode of the season by far regarding Hush. Not Hush. I keep wanting to call it Hush.
I know, it's Hyde.
Yes, it's Hyde, and they don't actually hide at all. Yes, and which is just about what Charlie is saying. It's, but why do they call it Hyde? They didn't hide once. Hiding feelings, perhaps, or the truth. Also, what's with the Dr. TARDIS's mistrust of Clara? This episode created more questions than it answered. Speculation makes me smile. I agree with all that. I mean, I do think actually, I like Charlie's interpretation of the title, I have to say. Because, you know, that actually makes sense.
Yep. Hiding the truth, hiding feelings.
Yes.
There's also
the pocket universe is hidden.
Well, you know what? I actually come to think of it, I think, like, part of the reason that the ending was a bit like the whole love weak sauce
love,
ending
love,
is that
love.
They kind of said, like, there's some, they could have really just thrown a line about there's something hidden just out of the corner of our eyes, which is that monster.
Mm-hmm.
Like the monster in our on our side of
didn't they do that though?
Only at the end.
No, but no, there's like they like there's a mon like hidden just I guess the silence was the, you know, monster hidden just outside of your view.
Right, but that was like you forget about it and stuff, yeah. Like that. But this was I was thinking about something slightly different, where it was the monster's intentionally hiding
mm-hmm.
to
to so he can grab a ride back. It's trying to scare you, so you run and find a way back, and he can hitch a ride back. Mm-hmm. And that was the kind of thing where they could have just mentioned, mm-hmm. and maybe that's why it's called Hide. But hide your truth and all that. I can totally go with that explanation as well. That was an excellent bon mot, as they say.
Let's see. Also, Jeff Ewell had some thoughts on both Facebook. He started off on Facebook and then he went over to Twitter to make this confusing for me. On the surface, it was entertaining. When you start to think on it, it gets troublesome. Used to like the individual themed episodes, but feel I need a stronger story arc than Claris. Considering nothing is being revealed, like the TARDIS hologram, the short-lived spookiness, and the old-fashioned camera that is heat-proof. Feel the season should be called Doctor What? Sorry for ranting, hope others felt differently. He also followed up with, why was it called Hyde? Luckily, the next episode should better be awesome. I think, I don't disagree. I mean, at the very least, like, I want to understand how traveling with the Doctor is fitting into Clara's life.
Yeah.
Which is still not really determined. She just kind of seems to be there hanging out, keeping it real. Which is, I guess, kind of an old school Doctor Who thing.
Yeah, but it's like, I come and pick you up and we go off and have some fun together.
Yes, but
I guess it's weird because they kind of, in the first episode, set it up as if they're going to go on a series of dates. Mm-hmm. Getting to know you type dates. And
I mean, if you interpret, like, there's nothing to... I feel like the dating theory seems totally acceptable. And she's just kind of living her life otherwise in between. Right. But that's us talking and not the show saying.
Yeah. You know what? They've never really addressed that. Like, I wonder if we've only worried about this question. Mm-hmm. We've only worried about this question with Amy and Rory, and then they addressed it. And so now it's a question of like, well, what happens with this companion?
Well, it's not just Amy and Rory. Amy and Rory barely addressed it. But before that, we had Rose, whose relationship between home and TARDIS life was very clear. We then had Martha. Right, we had Martha, whose home TARDIS relationship life was very clear. Donna freaking packed her bags.
Right. She's like, screw this place.
Yeah, so I feel like it's not unfair for us to have the expectation that this make a little sense.
Right.
Let's see. What else do we have from you, internet people? We got an email from our friend Jason Howell.
Yes, Jason delivers yet again his grand vision of the episode and Doctor Who in general. We love getting these emails, Jason. So please keep sending them.
Yes.
And basically, He loved it. Mm-hmm. He thought it was one of the best. He actually was pointing out how it de-emphasized the HD. He goes on because, you know, the HD robs the show of mystery, ultimately. And he goes on a bit of a rant on how, like, we were discussing is like Doctor Who getting too adult, and he feels the opposite. It's getting too childish. Mm-hmm. It's the show's become something bigger and broader, and it was supposed to be aimed at families, but sort of lost the balance and now go to more childish aspects of the show with the whole, like, it's a fairy tale mm-hmm. angle. I'm paraphrasing what Jason's saying.
It's a nicely written email.
Yeah.
I think he points out that the science, there might be some science issues with this episode. But honestly, if the episode has as many good dialogue scenes as this one, I could care less about the little details like non-melting cameras.
Yeah.
And he speculates as well, similar to you, that whatever's going to happen to Clara that fragments her is something that's going to happen to this Clara later in her timeline.
Yeah.
And, if you're looking over from carrying themes from previous episodes, motorbikes from 1 and 2, music from 2 and 3, professors from 3 and 4, ooh, good point about the professors. Mm-hmm. I think there was a whole something over there bit for the umbrella that will be important in next week's Journey to the Center of the TARDIS episode.
It's drinking game we were looking into, like, but it's not really there.
Yeah.
You're like, what carried over from last episode?
Yes. I think, it's an interesting way to structure a season of television. It's
right.
Like, not a thorough line through the entire season, but every episode has, like, one connecting element.
Which is funny, though, because they actually still have a through line. I mean, mm-hmm. again, why it's this one's a good one. It somehow balances like, hey, new separate fun adventure with, oh, there's actually connects to the larger mystery that's going on.
Cool. Yeah. No, I agree. Let's see. Regarding pulling up, sorry, I have to go to the Tumblrs, where our good friend Nicholas Slayton commented regarding the name of the Doctor reveal as saying, "You had me at the Doctor and Alex Kingston." Mm-hmm. So he doesn't even need to know the Doctor's name. He just wants more Alex Kingston on the screen.
Which actually I was going to point out on the posters that came out, like,
yeah,
all of them would say Matt Smith, like they're all movie style posters that say Matt Smith and Jean-Louis Coleman. That's the one that says Matt Smith, Jean-Louis Coleman, and Alex Kingston. She gets equal billing, mm-hmm, as the other two.
Yeah, I mean, ooh, I wonder if she'll make it into the pre-credits.
Yeah.
I forget if she's been doing that already.
Yeah, I feel like when she shows up that she's actually in there. I actually had a general question. It kind of occurred to me, like, this whole put out a poster for each episode. Mm-hmm. Like, do they do that for American shows? I kind of feel sometimes they do.
I think maybe they do it for... I don't know, because I think the reason they're doing the posters is because of, like, the thing they pledged at the beginning of the season, which is, you know, we're going to do, every week's going to be a big blockbuster movie.
You think this is something brand new that they've been doing?
I can't think of a TV show that does it regularly. I think sometimes they do it. Like, I think for very special episodes, like, I know Once More, the Buffy episode, Once More with Feeling,
right,
had a poster.
Right.
The Buffy episode Once More with Feeling had a poster. That's the only example I have. But yeah, I think that's, I don't know of American shows that do it. If you guys know of any, please let us know. On Google Plus, Gur Arg comments, definitely the best so far this half season. Felt like getting back on track. Since watching it, I've seen criticism of continuity and plot holes, but they didn't bother me at the time. Maybe they will on rewatch.
Right.
And I say, you know, I feel like a plot hole is only a problem when you notice it.
Yeah.
I think. Like, and I think usually, there are plenty of things I really love that have tons of plot holes, but I go with it.
Yeah, you can sit, like, it's, if you're potentially sitting down, you can find something to dissect and complain about for anything.
Yes.
But it's when stuff is just, while you're watching it, it manifests in your head, like, that makes no sense, if that's the problem
yeah,
was.
Yeah, like, I mean, I went and saw Jurassic Park in 3D, right, a couple weeks ago. It was wonderful. It was worth it just to be in a theater of people laughing hysterically at Dr. Ian Malcolm in repose. Like basically, Jeff Goldblum spends, like, the second half of that movie just kind of laying on things with his shirt half open and kind of glistening.
It sounds like a good time, Liz.
It's a pretty good time, I'm not going to lie to you. But, anyways, there is, like, but you're watching it in IMAX and it's got great sound. And you're not only picking up on details you've never caught before, but you're, and this includes, like, things like, hey, car door in that Jeep, you weren't open before and now you're closed and now you're open again. Like, there's like a huge continuity issue with the Jeep doors and the T-Rex scene.
Right.
But then the T-Rex attacks and it's like, who gives a crap?
Who gives?
Let's see, any other comments I want to make sure we bring up before we move on. Do you have anything on your
end? No, nothing I think has popped up on our comments.
Oh, we got one comment from Grunk. Grunk, who's continuing to share with us lovely links on our Google Plus page. If you go check that out, if you follow us on Google Plus, you will get exposed to some wonderful links and videos and whatnot, shared by our lovely listeners. Hubert Motley Jr. Observed last week, it took Mark Gatiss's recent episode Cold War to make me feel like I'm watching Doctor Who again. How did that happen, timey-wimey TV? And I don't have a good answer for you, except maybe you've been missing some proper Doctor Who baddies.
Yeah.
And Spoonheads on the first week, and God Monster Planet Thing in the second week.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just want, like, a guy in a weird suit.
You know, I just realized something with this episode and with Cold War.
Uh-huh.
You didn't have just a bunch of faceless monsters.
Right.
You know, it was actually, like, you actually had a sense of, like, it didn't feel like the tradition. And they also weren't traditional. I mean, one was a traditional Ice Warrior, which you can accept, like, not being introduced yet to another vague sense of a monster. This one had a monster, like all Doctor Who episodes, but you barely saw it until the very end when it was almost comedic. Like, like how horrifyingly ugly that it was.
But the Doctor, but it just wanted to be in love. Because love is all you need.
It was actually a great moment. As much as I complained about, like, oh, way too much love, it was a great moment. The Doctor's reaction to it was just so, like,
He's trying not to be judgmental.
Oh, of course. That's wonderful.
Yes. Oh, man. Good times.
Good times.
Good times. And I'm looking forward to next week. I'm looking forward to quite a bit, actually. I really hope that it answers questions and solves mysteries and whatnot.
Yeah. And even if it doesn't, as long as it gives us a kind of fun tour of the TARDIS.
Yeah. That's definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah. One thing they've done a number of times is shown like how something that happens on the outside does have an effect on the inside of the TARDIS. So it'd be really cool to see some of that going on.
Definitely. So, well, we'll leave you until then. As always, you can find us on Twitter at timeywimeytv. At timeywimeytv. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/timeywimeytv. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Google Plus by searching for us on Google Plus. You can find us on Tumblr by going to timeywimeytv.tumblr.com. You can email us at feedback@timeywimey.tv. And our website is timeywimey.tv.
Subscribe to us on iTunes.
Do it.
On your favorite RSS reader on our own website. Or on Stitcher, just a general podcast directory listening site that we're also listed on.
Yeah. You can listen to us in all those places, and we really appreciate you doing so.
Yes.
So until laters, back next week.
Next week.
We'll see you then. Enjoy your timey-wimey time.
Bye, all.
Bye.